Years ago, when I was a relatively newly ordained priest, maybe about 8 or 10 months into being a priest, I had an appointment one day that was set up with a woman whose name I didn't recognize. And I asked the parish secretary, "Do you know what this meeting is about?" She said, I have no idea. So the appointed time came, and the woman came to the parish office, and I showed her into my office, and we sat down. And the very first thing that she said to me at the beginning of the meeting was, "I want you to know that I've been really angry at you for about the last 6 months." I thought to myself, that is a heck of a way to start a meeting. And I said to her, "Well, you're not the only one, so what's your issue?" And she said, "I don't know if you remember me." I didn't. "But months ago, I went to you for confession." Still wasn't ringing a bell. And she said, "You refused to give me absolution." I had realized in that moment that that had happened several times, so I still wasn't real clear on who this woman was. So I said to her, "That's happened more than once. What was the circumstances?" And she said, "I came to you for confession and I said, I feel disconnected from God and I need absolution." She said that I told her that she needed to confess sins to receive absolution. And she said to me, "I can't think of any. I just feel disconnected from God." And evidently, I said to her, "Well, if you don't have any sins to confess, I can't give you absolution. Have a great day." She said that she was really angry about that. And she was angry at me. And then after a number of months, she was driving somewhere and she was listening to Catholic radio. And somebody was giving a talk about sin. And then in that moment, out of the blue, hearing this talk about sin, she realized that she was a sinner. And she needed to go to confession. And so after she had told me this story, she said, "Now I'm ready." And I reached over to the table next to my chair and I picked up my purple stole and I put it on and we began confession. Obviously, I can't tell you what she said, but honestly, I don't even remember what it was. What I do remember was by the time she got to the end, we were both crying. It was the first time in nearly 50 years that this woman had made a good confession. And the floodgates of grace had opened in her life, and she experienced God's mercy. The gospel for today speaks about this blind man, and in the longer form of the gospel, which I chose not to read because we've got the Passion coming up in a few weeks, so figure we'll save our energy for that. Jesus disconnects this man's blindness from the actual sin of he or his parents, but blindness is still a biblical image for sin. We know that we are born into this world with original sin. But original sin is removed in baptism. What remains, though, is a predisposition towards sin, which we call concupiscence. That's the technical term for it. Concupiscence predisposes us towards actual sin. You have original sin removed in baptism, but the sins that we actually commit, actual sins. Actual sin. Concupiscence predisposes us towards actual sin. Here's the problem. The effect of sin in our life, according to the Catechism, does two things. It dims the intellect and it weakens the will. In other words, it makes us spiritually dumb and lazy. And because of that, sin, which should be a big deal in our life, many times we actually just minimize it and even justify it. And I think that this woman was experiencing something that all of us can experience, because she hadn't looked deeply in her life and hadn't gone to confession regularly. She minimized sin. She knew she felt disconnected from God, but she didn't connect it with sin. She knew she needed to be reconnected, and she wanted absolution, but she didn't see the sin in her own life until that moment of grace. When we go to the sacrament of confession, there are three essential components that we must do to prepare for receiving absolution. The first one is to name sins. We have to name them to the best of our ability, and when they're serious and kind in number. This is essential for the sacrament of confession, because if we don't name the sin, if we're not coming to confession with particular sins, we can't be forgiven of just a concept, an idea, or a feeling. That was the reason why, in the case of this woman, I refused to give her absolution, and have done that many times as a priest. To name our sins the best we can, and to be aware that there are serious mortal sins that many times we have minimized, justified, or even acquiesced to in our life. Unfortunately, I've heard homilies over the years by various priests who have minimized the notion of serious sin, saying things like, well, there are mortal sins, but it's like murdering somebody, and nobody here this morning has done that. There are other mortal sins besides murder. And sometimes they can creep into our life in ways we don't expect. Not to create an entire list, but the use of pornography is a mortal sin. Taking the Lord's name in vain, blaspheming the Lord's name, is a mortal sin. This is serious. A couple of weeks ago, I was out to lunch with a priest friend of mine, and we were at a restaurant minding our own business, and a couple tables over, we overheard somebody also at the restaurant who took the Lord's name in vain. And my priest friend just said, blessed be the name of the Lord, as a quick prayer of reparation. I thought that was a really good idea, and I decided I was going to do the same. Fast forward a few days later, sitting at a different restaurant, overheard somebody else take the Lord's name in vain, and I said, blessed be the name of the Lord. And I can assure you that things got very awkward very quick at Whipple's. We cannot minimize or justify sin in our own life. This is a serious thing. The second part of confession is we must have at least imperfect contrition. What do I mean by that? Perfect contrition is when we're sorry for our sins out of love of God. That can be hard sometimes, let's face it. The minimum that we have to have for confession is imperfect contrition. What does that mean? Imperfect contrition is when we're sorry for our sins, either because of the consequences of them, or even just fearing the pains of hell. As long as we're sorry for our sins with at least the level of imperfect contrition, we've met the bar for confession. And finally, we need to have a firm purpose of amendment. Now, of course, sins can become habits, and we can struggle with them and have to go to confession time and again, but we at least need to have some firm purpose of amendment. We can't simply go to confession on Saturday, Mass on Sunday, sin on Monday, wash, rinse, and repeat again and again. We should strive to overcome our sins. One of the questions that people often have is, how often should I go to confession? Well, in some respects, it's kind of an individual answer. But there is a standard that's still been given to us. When the Blessed Mother appeared in Fatima, she told the shepherd children that she wanted Catholics to go to confession every month. To go monthly. Now, see, the problem is if we don't go frequently, then it becomes hard for us to even see what our sins are. Remember, we become spiritually dumb and lazy. the dimming of the will and the dimming of the intellect and the weakening of the will. But when we go to confession regularly, we're able to see our sins, to see what they are and to be sorry for them and to have that firm purpose of amendment and be aided by God's grace to overcome them. So I look at it this way. If Our Lady said every month, then that's what we should do. After all, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. I'd like to turn your attention to a strange and mysterious part of the gospel. That Jesus spit on the ground, gross, made clay with his saliva, weird, and smeared it all over the man's eyes. Definitely a safe environment violation. Why did he do that? There's deep symbolism behind it. He's connecting his action of healing this man back to the very first moments of the act of creation in the first chapter of Genesis. When we know that in the act of creation, that God formed man out of the dust of the earth, the clay of the earth. And what Jesus is doing in this passage that we read is that he's showing that he is reforming this man in the order of grace, using the very stuff of original creation to point to a new creation, being made anew in grace. Years ago, this woman had come to me wanting to unite herself to Christ more deeply, but had minimized and justified sin in her life. She became blind to it. But God's grace broke into her life, and in her case, through listening to Catholic radio and being refused absolution. But when God's grace broke into her life, she knew that she needed to come to confession. And when she received and heard those words of absolution, her life was changed. She was remade in the image of grace. Remember, Christians are not called to be merely good people. Every person is called to be good. You and me as Christians, we are called to be holy. Our call to holiness is not just simply to be a good person, not cheat, not steal, not gossip. Nobody should do those things. We're called to be holy. We've been given the gift of communion with Christ through baptism. And we must never minimize sin in our life, but actively seek God's mercy in the sacrament of confession especially. And to realize that mere goodness is insufficient, but rather you are called to strive after holiness, nothing less. And it's through the forgiveness of sins, through God's mercy and grace that he wishes to give us, that we can pursue this lofty calling, this call to be saints, the call that we've been given, not to be merely good, but to be holy.